This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on. You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know. I should know it's on. It's on.
You good to go?
I'm good to go.
All right, cool, cool. Let's cut right to it, man. How you doing?
Not too bad. How are you?
Man, I'm doing great. No complaints, man. Hey, so school me on this Cameo app you got. I know it's this app, right, where people can make requests for you to do like these personalized social messages, social video messages.
Mm-hmm.
How's it work?
Well, after a long period of time, about a year of Cameo trying to get me to do it, I didn't want to do it.
Yeah, they were recruiting you pretty heavy.
And I was declining them.
Yep. They reached out a few times.
Yep. So basically, somebody can come on a Cameo, and they'll request for me to do something.
Yeah. All kinds of athletes, entertainers.
Oh, yeah.
Reality stars. People on, like, 90 Day Fiancé.
Bro, there's, I think Steve Harvey, like, 400 a message.
$400. Oh, okay. It's got to be some guys higher than that, too.
Oh, it's a, listen. The way my mind works, I'm not really sure how to do it. But I don't want to say I don't have the time, but I'm one of those guys, like I'm either hot and I'll do it, or I'm cold and I'm like, I'm okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And bro, some of the stuff that's in there, like.
What kind of stuff do you like? Just like entertain our listeners for what may seem normal for you, but some of us probably listen like, what? That really gets sent to you?
Or people ask
you of these certain things?
Like, so I have someone say, hey, requesting a Mother's Day message for my mom. Like, of course. That's cool. Right? And most of the time when I get someone that send me something, after I record, I always tell them, hey, thank you. I appreciate you allowing me to be part of your, you know, whoever that individual, special day. Because I don't really see myself like that. Mm-hmm. But then there's some people like they write like an autobiography.
Or like a dissertation almost.
Yeah, a dissertation. Like you want me to wish somebody a happy birthday and then you're telling me what seat number they're in.
Oh, as they're watching the game?
As they're watching the game. And then they get pissed at me. But I don't like repeat all that. It was like one guy, he wrote so much stuff. I literally text him on the app. I said, what do you exactly want me to do?
Yeah.
Because it was so much.
Gave you a smorgasbord of options.
Oh, man. I mean, it's like, hey, he's turning 30. He's turning the age in May. Please wish him a happy birthday from me. He's a huge Panther fan since their first year on the team, big fan of Smitty. He's amazing father and husband. Cool. No problem. And there are some people.
I'll say, give me the ones that are.
Oh, I got to go back in this.
That are challenging to you.
Man, let me go down. Let me go down yonder. There's some where I just got to block. I can't do it. Like, I just can't.
Give me a crazy one.
Well, what's funny is every so often you get the. Wrong black guy. Like they get me confused with somebody. They get me confused with somebody else. Right?
What do you think you was? LL Cool J or somebody?
I was just there like, hey, could you? Hey,
oh, my bad. I thought you were Nelly.
Hey, Rick, can you? Damn, got my picture and my name. Or, you know, hey, can you, what's the guy? This guy, he has a YouTube channel.
Okay.
And he wants me to introduce him on his YouTube channel.
But we don't know what the YouTube channel is about.
That dude can be creeper. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I'm not doing that.
No telling what he reviewing on YouTube.
No telling. I had somebody, let's see. This guy says, hey, Steve, this blank has a listener league for fans. I'm trying to win a spot using cameos as recommendations. A little humor mixed with your reputation as a player and analyst would really help. This is something you could do via Cameo.
He gave you the full creative brief. Right?
I say, you want the truth or the lie? It could be made up.
Then he's saying you can wing it.
When you troll DJ Moore about your fantasy lineup to Cam made me think you're good for this. I could put together a loose script or something.
Yeah, he's got the whole creative brief.
Whatever you think you can do to build me up, make it sound like you know me.
I could get you some talking points, loose script.
Here's what I said. Sorry, I'll pass. Thanks. Not interested. Good luck. But no. And I guess maybe because you could pay people that.
That's what I was just about to say. Like, it's crazy how you can now have this connection to anyone, athletes, entertainers, celebrities, whatever the case may be. But 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30, you didn't have this much access. Now you sign up for an app, you can put in a request, and whether you fulfill it or not, they can send you a message that you can now have access to someone. Now, again, you can decide whether or not you're going to do it.
Oh, here goes one. But this old is crazy. College friends, fantasy league, roast the out of someone, but Joe. Joe won this year, 3-time champ. Avery never won at all, says he's cursed. Just sucks. Had bad trades. Jeremy went 1-12. Thomas always 1-done in the playoffs. I hit him with decline.
Man, there's the things people will pay for.
It's all about, hey, do this for me. You know, let me show. You know,
transactional, we talk about the relationship that people have with athletes or entertainers. Sometimes it's even frustrating for me, and I'm not even in your seat.
Here's the funniest thing. I wish someone a happy birthday who knew someone else who knew someone else, and then a buddy that I actually knew.
Oh, so it came back around to you.
Came back and was like, look, and I just laughed. And me and him said, wow, the things people will pay for just to say, look what Steve did for me. There is some that I really enjoy, like somebody's coming out of surgery, somebody who's breast cancer, someone who's really hit hard times, who's depressed.
You're really providing some hope for, some inspiration for.
Correct. So I had a lady, she got upset at me. Send me a nasty little.
Sent you a nasty gram?
Nasty gram. Her husband's birthday was coming up, and she wanted me to wish him a happy birthday. Now, when you sign up, they allot you so many days to do it. So when she signs up.
So, like, complete the request.
Complete the request. I have 6 days. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not my fault you signed me up 4 days before his birthday. Is that my fault?
Same day every year, right?
I don't know. Maybe he has a leap year birthday. I'm not sure. But she was mad. She declined it and said, false advertisement. You didn't answer it in time.
What is this, Craigslist?
Here's the problem. I have 6 days
yeah.
to complete it. Or I have 6 days to ignore, decline, to do it. I still have a choice. You have offered me a message to you, and I have 6 days to complete it. Don't get mad at me if I complete it on day 5. Mm-hmm. I still technically got a whole 24 hours. Now, you should have picked me sooner. Now, I have 411 completed cameos. I have 98% completion.
Look at you.
Sometimes I knock them out. Other times, you know, I'm on that CP time. I just get to them when I get to them. Hey, sometimes you got to tell us. If you want me to be here at noon, sometimes you got to tell me 11.
Right.
So, hey, who we got?
Coming up on the Cut To It podcast, we've got Mike Golic, former NFL player. He was also known for being a host for Mike and Mike, a former NFL analyst, and all-around great guy. Mike Golic on the Cut To It podcast.
Oh man, my pleasure. I'm looking forward to this. I have no outlet anymore to talk anymore. So I love taking opportunities.
All right. Well,
awesome.
We're going to get started on this opportunity. Our first segment is called Get Iced Up. But Smitty, okay, give him the first of our Get Iced Up questions.
All right. If you can change your name to anything or to something, what would you change it to?
I think Biff.
Biff?
Wasn't that on Back to the Future?
Yes, it was. Now, and Biff wasn't a great character, but I just, it would be a one syllable.
Biff was a complete dirtbag.
Yeah, he was. He was. I would like to change that and be a better Biff than the Biff from back then. Great recall, by the way. Yeah, it would definitely be the almanac.
I remember that.
It would be a short.
Yeah, he did. Bet on
World. Exactly. It would be a quick name like that. Like I name my daughter. We call quick names like it's Sydney, but we call her Sid, Jake, Mike. Those are my kids. We like quick one name or one syllable. So I just figured I'd go off a little bit and do Biff and go down that road.
Would you do some of the things Biff did, like the almanac and make yourself really rich, or would you use it for good?
You know, this isn't a bailout question, but couldn't I do both?
I would have bet on that World Series game.
I would have definitely made a ton of money, but then I would have used some of that money for good. So that I could morally justify why I was cheating the system. I'm okay, right? I'm doing good with it. So it's like, okay, it doesn't matter how you got it. You didn't hurt anybody. You made a lot of money, and then I'll spend a lot of it on the good, and also, you know, then fly private everywhere as well.
All right.
What'll be your name?
What?
Oh, mine? Change your name.
Bishop. I don't know why. I love Bishop.
Bishop. Yes. Like Bishop from Juice?
No, just Bishop. Not from Juice, just Bishop. I love the name Bishop.
Wow. Okay. That's an out-of-the-box one, too. That's
super manly, right? I think it's like, just like.
Yeah, high regard.
Like Bishop. You talking about, hey, hold
Bishop
on.
Smith.
Hey, Bishop's
Bishop,
coming.
Bishop Smith's
coming. Put it up. Bishop's right. coming.
Right. Now, you wouldn't want anybody to shorten it to Bish. You'd want it Bishop. Like, you know, that some people want to say,
hey, shut up, Bish.
Nah, you bitch. No.
Shut up, Bish.
That would be tough. That'd be like, wait, what'd you say?
Well, Bish, you holding up the line.
Well, my shirt. Listen, my shirt says.
Bish, have my money. That's tomorrow.
That's what my shirt says. My shirt says, Beach better have my money.
Yeah, yeah. You're going to get in a lot of trouble if you go Bishop, because there's going to be a whole lot of fish going on. Yeah. So,
if my name is Bishop and you walking around referring to me as Bish, I'm going to be your last B word.
You walked right into it, though, man.
Oh, you did, yeah. Yeah, Bish.
All right, let's move on. Oh, dirt bags. All right. So this is an interesting conversation that we had prior to this. So I think this is excellent. Beach or mountains? Which one do you prefer?
Wow. You know what? I have been, I enjoy hiking, in all honesty. So I may go mountains, and I'm more of a pool guy than a beach guy, you know? So I would probably out of that go mountains.
Why are you a pool guy than beach guy?
One of the reasons is, this is kind of a public service announcement as well. Most places where there's a beach, you want to get wet and go in the water, sharks live in the water.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you get wet and you get sand on you a little bit. I'm not well into that. That's all. I'll go hang out by the pool, put my thong on, you know, and just kind of chill there.
Excuse me?
He said, yeah. You heard him.
And someone would say, Bish, put your Bermuda shorts back on.
Put his car in Bahamas.
Yeah, no, I would go mountain. I would go mountain, whether the biking in the mountain or hiking in the mountain.
All right, so we're here in North Carolina. So can you... Do you believe, have you ever been to like Kiowa or Myrtle Beach?
Yes, I've been to both.
Do you consider Myrtle Beach a beach?
No. No. I have just not been a Myrtle Beach guy. Not really. Yeah, I go there and golf. Like Darius Rucker would have his Monday after the Masters tournament out there in Myrtle Beach. And so I'd go out there to golf. I never really hit the beaches. No, I golfed at Kiowa as well. That's very nice. But yeah, just not really a beach guy.
All right. So what did you have for breakfast this morning?
So I got up first and I had oatmeal with almonds in it and with some little granola in it. And then me and my wife worked out. We work out at Orange Theory Fitness. And then after that, let me tell you what, and I made some for her. I make killer avocado toast.
Ooh, what kind of, what kind of bread?
So we'll do like wheat bread, but then what I'll do is I'll get turkey sausage and I'll cook up the turkey sausage. And on the bread, I'll put the guacamole on the bread. I'll put the turkey sausage over the bread. And then I'll do an eggs over easy and lay it right on top of the turkey sausage on the bread, on the avocado.
It's pretty good. There you go.
Oh, yeah. I love to cook. Big fan of cooking. So that was our post-workout meal. Got our protein in. Yeah. And if I didn't make that, then I would have had a donut or something.
You go from avocado toast to hitting the hot button at Krispy Kreme.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I'm versatile.
There you go. You got to know when.
All right. Tell us something that you're grateful for today.
You know, a lot of people may not think it because they ended up, you know, not renewing me. But I am grateful for my time at ESPN because we're a real big, tight family. And it allowed me, for something I enjoy doing, it allowed me to bring my family along, you know. And like when I started doing the show, Mike was 10, Jake was 9, and Sydney was 5. And when I ended my time there, Mike was 31, Jake was 30, and Sydney was 26. So it was a long time. So it was fun having them grow up kind of on air. Both my boys signed their letters of intent to Notre Dame on air. My daughter signed her letter of intent to Notre Dame to swim there. We've had them all on a lot. And now my son, listen, Mike tried to make it. They both played at Notre Dame. Mike was in a couple of camps at the NFL. Unfortunately, as Steve, you know, it doesn't work for everybody. He gave it a shot and for a couple of years, and it didn't go. So he's in the business now and doing extremely well.
I listen to him. When you guys were on and having him, I was like, man, Mike is, you know, Mike Jr. is doing an excellent job. He's progressed. And the confidence as well. Mm-hmm. And I saw him wear one tattoo, full sleeve.
He definitely has the tats.
Yeah. He wasn't always. It was like gradually. Okay, my hair is getting lost. Let me get a tattoo here. It's getting back further and further. Let me get the sleeve.
Yeah.
Now he's fully bald headed and sleeves, but man, he's doing a great job.
He said he was going to get the other sleeve if he played any amount of time in the league, he'd have felt better about getting the other sleeve. He just has the one. And you know, who knows? But you know, when he was doing a show with me or with others, he wasn't like, you know, the main person. He was one of like two or three. Now he does a show with Chinea Gumake, who plays for the LA Sparks, and she was the number one pick. She went to Stanford. Well, she's doing the show with Mike in the afternoon. And you know, now, so they're both front and center, you know, these young 30-year-olds, you know, doing their thing. It's cool. But over, going back to what I was saying, overall, it was just nice to bring my family along on this ride. It wasn't, I went to work and I came home and, you know, the two did mix pretty well. And it was cool because it lasted so long and was able to see them all grow up through it. So that was fun.
Favorite sports teams growing up or favorite sports team when you were growing up?
Interestingly enough, I grew up in Cleveland, so I was a kind of a Browns fan. I was a big Leroy Kelly fan. And amazingly enough, and all the young people out there, Google him. He was a running back with the Cleveland Browns years ago. And I got to meet him at a Super Bowl maybe 10 years ago, and it was very cool. But interestingly enough, growing up in Cleveland, I was a Oakland Raider fan. Kenny Stabler, Otis Sistrunk. I mean, all those crazy bastards, you know? I mean, I just love the way they play. And I was like, man, if I play ball, that's the way I want to play, you know? So that was kind of the team I grew up watching, just all those nutcases play ball. It's pretty cool.
So you said you're from Cleveland, but, you know, so we always like to ask, where are you from in a place you call your hometown?
Where I'm from is Cleveland, obviously. The place I call home, you know, I'm going to be in two spots. I have a place at Notre Dame where we all went to school, and I have a place out here in Arizona. And, you know, people always ask me, you know, what's your favorite pro team? And I don't really have one. And it wasn't because I worked in the business. I mean, I played for the Houston Oilers, which is now the Tennessee Titans, again, for the youngsters out there. And then the Philadelphia Eagles, and then finished with the Miami Dolphins. Most of my years were in Philly, so I had the most appreciation there. But I don't – nobody there was there when I – is there now when I was there. So I don't really root for a pro team. But, you know, we have a lot of ties at Notre Dame. My brother Bob went there. My brother Greg went there. I went there. All three of my kids went there. I met my wife there. Her sister went there. So there was a ton of us that went to school there. So that place is really close to my heart and our heart for our family. So I'll probably spend a lot of time in Arizona because we love it out in Arizona, but where we'll probably congregate the most will be at our place at Notre Dame, just because that place has been such a big part of our lives.
We have to take a break, and more than anything, we got to pay some bills.
Mm-hmm. Need that check.
I love Cut to It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut to It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut to It.
Facebook?
Cut to It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com, where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. Cuttoitpodcast.com.
So growing up in Ohio, how did it shape your perspective on how you see life, how you maneuver through life today?
Well, I mean, you know, we were middle class, the lower middle class as far as income, probably more lower from the money side. My dad, you know, worked, he was a bricklayer. And then he worked side jobs. My mom was a secretary, and he played ball in the Canadian Football League. He was a football player. He played at Indiana and then in the CFL. There was a few NFL teams that wanted him to come play there, but my brother Bob was born. My brother Greg was born, and I was actually on the way. He decided, you know, back then football wasn't making a ton of money, so he decided he was going to retire and just start raising the family. So we learned from my parents a great work ethic. I mean, a great work ethic. And they were – my dad's best line to us, and you don't really understand a lot of things parents are doing until obviously later, is in football, you know, before we went to practice, we would work out on the bags in the backyard, and then we'd go to practice, and then after practice, we'd work a little bit extra. And then he would say to us, now, whatever section you're on in school in a certain subject, go back on the section you were just on and make sure you understand it. Get on the section that you're on and peruse the section ahead, just so you know what's coming. He kind of applied it, and my parents applied the sports side to the academic side, and also said, you're not getting anywhere in sports without the academics. You know, we weren't going to play football at Notre Dame unless we had the grades as well. So that was always a big part. But he taught us, both my parents, I should say, taught us sacrifice. Okay, this is your goal. This is what you want to do. Well, this is what it's going to take. You may not be able to go out with your friends on the weekend. You may be up earlier than you want to. You may go to bed later than you want to, but this is what you need to do. And that's something I was able to pass on to my kids at a young age when they had their goals, you know, playing football to a certain level. And my daughter was a younger swimmer ranked nationally where she wanted to do. And I kind of said the same things to them. Okay, you're going to have to make some sacrifices. You know, you can't just do whatever you want and then expect to have the outcome. You know, there's going to be sacrifice involved. So that really, and my wife came from the same type of a background. She was born and raised in Chicago. So the same kind of work ethic as well, so that we were able to pass on to the kids. So I would say that's one of the biggest things I got from my parents was the work ethic and the versatility of how to apply it.
I mean, you brought up discipline, you brought up sacrifice, and you already got into sports, but what impact did sports have on your life?
Huge, because especially the team sports. Now, again, the one I love right along with football was wrestling. And wrestling, you are on a team, but that is pretty much an individual sport when you're out on the mat. You and another guy, I loved wrestling. Me and my brother Bob wrestled in high school and at Notre Dame as well. But there's something about the team aspect to me, and then I even get more specific to football. Because in football, one thing that you know is going to happen is you're going to get beat. No one, as my dad would always say, nobody's ever played the perfect game. He goes, you're going to get your ass knocked down. He said, how do you get up? You know, how do you get up and how do you respond from that? He said, you're going to get down. The teammate's going to help you up. You're going to see a teammate on the ground. You're going to help them up. You're going to learn to rely on the guy next to you that he's going to get his job done along with you. So you rely on one another. And Steve, as you know, as you go up the ranks, you always don't get along with everybody in the locker room. As I've always said, you know, even in the pros, there ain't 53 guys singing Kumbaya every morning. You know, there are guys just you don't get along with, but you respect them for in what they're doing, and you take that to the field, and you have mutual respect for one another and what you do. The team aspect of football, and my wife and I, she's on the board for Pop Warner football. I'm on the board for USA football. We're very big in the youth sports football, especially when they were really going through a lot when the CTE was, you know, became huge headlines years ago. So we are big on the youth sports, especially football, and just the team value of what that brings you to and how it can help you even out of football. Because as we know, most football players aren't getting out of high school. You know, they got to go live their life after that. But playing football and preparing for football and the team aspect, I think, can help in so many other avenues of life. So that, to me, is one of the great motivators and great teachers is how are you as a teammate with each other?
We had the privilege now of having two Notre Dame guys, and we had Jerome Bettis on. And he walked us through his recruiting process with Coach Lou Holtz. And not to date you, but, you know, back in the 80s.
Yeah, I'm older.
You know, you had the privilege of going to Notre Dame. What was your experience like being recruited and being coached at Notre Dame?
So mine was different, I think, than most because my brother Bob went there first, and he's 6 years older than me. So when he went there in 1975, I was like 12 years old, and Dan Devine was the coach then. So I got to see the campus as a 12-year-old going in there and seeing, Joe Montana and Ross Browner and Willie Fry and these other greats at Notre Dame as a 12, 13, 14-year-old. You know, just wide-eyed and wow. And then my brother Greg went there. He was a year ahead of me. So when he went there as a freshman, I was a senior in high school and getting heavily recruited by everybody. But now when I saw him there, I'd see everybody as my peer then. Now these were guys that were kind of my age, guys that I would be playing with and or against. So it was kind of a different mindset. But I got to see Notre Dame in a couple of different ways. So that helped me a lot. And it gave me a lot about Notre Dame before I even, you know, committed there. Now, my freshman year, Jerry Faust was the coach. He was a coach at Cincinnati Moeller, a big time high school. Mm-hmm. And they hired at Notre Dame. Obviously, hindsight being 2020, it didn't work out. He brought a lot of high school coaches. Listen, it didn't. I mean, we were the ones on the field not getting the job done, but he brought in like five high school coaches with him. And it was really weird. So he even realized it was over his head. And we obviously didn't perform well enough on the field because I never had a record better than 7-4. But one of the things I remember about recruiting, now, when I was recruited, you didn't take your trips until after your senior year of football. So you're talking November of your senior year, you would take your five visits. Now these guys are committing freshman year, sophomore year, both my kids, you know, committed their junior year. Well, back then you didn't. It was after your senior year of football. So I had trips set up to USC, UCLA, Tennessee, Miami, and I think one other place. And Jerry Faust called me on Thanksgiving after my senior year of football. We had just ended. And he said, listen, you have a full scholarship to Notre Dame, blah, blah, blah. And I said, coach, I said, this is where I'm coming. I'm coming to Notre Dame. Thank you. I said, you know, I got these trips set up. You know, I'm 18 years old, man. You know, I kind of, you know.
LA for free.
Yeah, exactly. I said, can you not really say anything yet, you know? And I'm going to go, you know, I'm coming to Notre Dame. I'm not going to get swayed. And he's like, yeah, no problem. But, you know, it got out. It got out on the wire that I had committed Notre Dame. And one call came in after the other, just canceling my visit because they heard I was like, oh, man. So my freshman year, we actually had the top-ranked recruiting class that year. We were preseason number 5, and we played LSU, my true freshman. First game my true freshman year, we smoked them. Me and a few other truths got in there and played a decent amount. A couple of teams in front of us lost. The second week of my true freshman year, we were number one in the country. And I'm like, this is awesome. My brother Bob won a title in 77. We're going to win two titles while I'm here. Man, we're not going to lose. We went to the Big House. We went to Michigan that next week and got our asses handed to us. I mean, and you know, reality set in, we won 5-6 that first year. And like I said, we didn't go better than 7-4 my time there. Again, wouldn't trade it, loved it, but it was from a record wise on the field, it wasn't the best.
Well, you brought up, you know, your teammates going back and looking at the roster, and you play with Tim Brown.
Yeah.
Steve
Berline. Yeah, I think you know him.
Berline.
Yeah.
He played with some dudes. Yeah,
they were loaded.
So my year, we had a guy, Mark Bavaro was my year. He got drafted second round by the Giants.
By the Giants.
Yeah, Mike Kelly was the center. He got drafted by the Oilers, the same team I did. Larry Williams, another old lineman, got drafted by the Browns. Mike Gandien got drafted by Atlanta. Story about Tim Brown. So Tim Brown was a freshman when I was a senior and a captain. So our first game was against Purdue on the road. And he's back there as a true, returning the opening kickoff. This is his first time stepping on the field. And what does he do? He fumbled. Oh. He fumbled the kickoff and Purdue recovered it on the 3-yard line. Mm. And I remember running out to see him. And like, I'm supposed to be one of the leaders. So I grabbed him. I said, Tim, you got to, no worries, man. You just got here. Forget it. Get it out of your head. We're going to need you. I mean, trying to do all the things I should be doing to build him up. And then he's like, thanks. And he runs away and I'm running on the field because he fumbled. We got to go on defense. And I'm running on the field going, damn, that kid ain't ever going to make it.
Wow.
Bro, that's just fucking
I mean, I think he did all right.
I know, but you know, I'm in the moment there, and I'm trying to give him the pep talk, but he's out of earshot, and I'm running. I'm going, Dan, I ain't going to do shit, man.
You know what? That is the truth. That's how offensive guy, hey, it's all right, motherfucker.
Yeah. It really is, man. Yeah, I would say it worked out pretty well for him, though. Yeah.
Immediately discounted Tim Brown.
It's like, that's what happens. Like, or you see a corner to get beat. Hey, man, it's okay. That motherfucker can't come. No, man.
Oh, listen, we had a number of those years when I was in Philly when the year we thought we were going to go to the Super Bowl, it was 91, and Randall Cunningham got his knee blown out in the first game against the Packers that year. Our defense was number one, rush, pass, and overall that year. We had a great defense, like we normally did there with the Reggie Whites, Jerome Brown, Seth Joiners of the world. And we ended up not even making the playoffs because the offense struggled going through multiple quarterbacks. And just like Steve said, man, there's an awful lot of glares going on in the offense.
When you tried back and forth.
Hey, I beat him in practice. Look at him. They beating him too.
Oh yeah. Our locker room, the offense was in the front part of the locker room. We'd always walk through them, and you know, there'd be some side ass comments made. And you know, there were some A personalities on that team, man. There were more than a few confrontations went on in that locker room.
Man, side out. Hey, yeah. Oh man. So you're a two sport athlete. You said it, you play football, but you also wrestled. How were you able to have the balancing act? You know, obviously your dad instilled some great things in you, but to play at Notre Dame football back in the 80s, Notre Dame football is the creme de la creme. And then you add wrestling to that. And then obviously having good grades, maintaining that, you know, how did you balance?
So the thing that I found, and I found that during football season, my grades were better than not football season because your time is regimented. You know, you actually see it. You know, you know the practices, where you got to be, when you got to be there, what you have to do. So you know you only have X amount of time then to get your schoolwork done. Now you're in springtime where it's just spring ball and a lot of your time isn't taken from you. You kind of do your own thing. You say, I got time to do it later. Where during the season, you don't. You got to get shit done. So wrestling took the place of winter workouts. Because, you know, when the college season ended, you start those winter workouts. And I told Jerry, Coach Faust, when I was signing, I said, now I want to wrestle at Notre Dame. And he said, no problem. Because, hell, wrestling preparing for wrestling is way harder than preparing for football. Let me just say that right up front.
Please walk me through that, because us two brothers ain't no wrestlers. So
let me tell you. Now, I was lucky. I was back when heavyweights, you know, could be weigh whatever they wanted, so I didn't have to cut. These other guys that all had to make weight, I mean, you are busting your ass in the on the mat wrestling. 6 minutes of wrestling. You can see guys boxing when they wear out, MMA when they wear out. Same in wrestling, man. You go three periods of 2 minutes and you are friggin' dead. And the amount of work it takes, the amount of lifting, the amount of running, the amount of cardio, the amount of wrestling on the mat, you are dead tired as compared, in my estimation, in doing them both at that level. To me, it was more difficult than football. So I would do that in the winter instead of winter workouts, and it would be done. The NCAA tournament was always done in early March. So it was before we had our spring ball. So I would wrestle and then I would jump right into spring ball. So basically I was doing it kind of year round. So it was, I mean, listen, it was hard, but I easily loved wrestling as much as football. But, you know, after there's no pro outside of the WWE, and this wasn't it. While I respect the hell out of what WWE is and I loved it, you know, my type of wrestling, there was no pro thing for that. There was, you go on to the Olympics or, you know, you do nothing, and pro football paid a lot more than that. So, you know, that's the direction I wanted, but I loved wrestling, and it did. It kept schoolwork regimented.
You put your body through a lot when it comes to wrestling too. I see a lot of guys, even in high school, who are on the wrestling team and them having to try to make weight like right before a match.
Trash bag.
Oh, the trash bag stuff.
Oh, listen, all that stuff is true. I mean, it almost isn't healthy when you see what happened. But this is what I would do. This is how a heavyweight would take advantage of this. So the lighter weight guys obviously would do all this to cut weight. And then as soon as they made weight, they'd bring food. They had food so they could eat right away. Well, you always know when you're really, really hungry, what happens? Your eyes are bigger than your stomach. So they'd bring all this food, they'd eat some of it, and they'd get full, and they'd have this extra food, and I would eat it. So it worked out pretty well for me.
That's pretty good. Smart man.
Yeah.
So you graduated with a finance and management.
Yep.
Management. What was your plan after school to do with those things?
Well, I mean, obviously the NFL was going to be first. I thought after my sophomore, right into my junior year, I thought I had a chance that I could make it in the NFL. I got hurt my senior year, the first game, that Purdue game. I actually got hurt during that game. And hindsight, I should have had a shoulder operation and redshirted to come back the next year, because I never played more than a half the rest of the year. When I went to the combine, I couldn't do any lifting because I had surgery on that shoulder. I couldn't run or lift. And then I ended up going in the 10th round. This was back when there were 12 rounds in the draft. So that was where all my effort was going. But the one thing I also knew, and they make sure, you know, to tell you that when you're at Notre Dame, outside of grades being very important, you can't blow off classes. You got to, whatever the NCAA line is, Notre Dame's was above it as far as maintaining a grade point average to play. Wow. Is one thing that Notre Dame was always known for, and I think a lot of schools are, but Notre Dame really has it around the country, was kind of their pipeline. They're other people that are in the real world, for lack of a better term, in the real world with jobs that you could have help with a connection to help you get started. So that was it. And take my degree and use it and try and use, you know, kind of the pipeline system to say, hey, you know, I have this degree. Where could I fit in here or there and try and use a connection? But luckily, I wouldn't have minded if I needed it, but turns out I never needed it.
I think it's about that time. Just take a little breather.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from cuttoitpodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Getting drafted in the 10th round, and I've heard a lot of stories about the 12 rounds and all that stuff and how long it was, you know, comparing the draft today. And obviously you doing Mike and Mike for so many years and just killing that. Compare the league today. Obviously when you play, you're playing with Reggie White, Jerome Brown, Randall Cunningham, Keith Byers. You had so many different personalities in the NFL. Houston, Jerry Glanville, Yeah. Warren Moon, right? You were even on the team with Steve Tasker.
Yep.
These different personalities. You've seen the best of all these worlds, been, you know, unfortunately, been around a Pro Bowler who's Jerome Brown lost his life.
Yep.
And you have done television. You see the way ball is today. And sometimes it could come across, we've come across on television as older players come across, we come across as envious or sad, but you really understand the gravity and what these young men have the opportunity to do and get with now, at some degree, some of them, not all of them, some of them don't really have to do much anymore. Don't have to prove themselves. They're instant celebrities, instant superstars. And going to fifth and sixth round, right? Compare the league as you see it, playing it, watching it, and commentating it.
Well, there are two really distinct differences from my time to now. And the first, I'll go on the field. I think we all know this is different on how the game is played. And the one thing I don't really like is when I hear, and I hear it about basketball as well, that the players are softer now than back in the day. And the reason it's not as physical in either sport is because the rules have dictated that. Because people always say, oh my God, LeBron never could have played in the 80s. That's bullshit. If LeBron, and I don't mean LeBron like he is now. If LeBron was born to where he was in the NBA in the 80s, then he would have grown up playing that way. You can't just take a guy and in this system and say, put him in the 80s and how would he do? You can't do that. He would be born and bred to play that way. So he would have been playing 80s style of basketball.
Or he wouldn't have made it.
Oh, that's exactly right. So the saying it's softer now, no, that's just the way they're calling it. Listen, I think it's so difficult to be a defender in the NFL now. You wide receivers, my God, you got it made now. I mean, you can't be touched, you know?
But they still dropping the ball, though.
Well, no. When it's all done.
Still dropping. still tiptoeing Pink Panther across the middle.
Which that's probably the biggest difference on the field is there's no more intimidation factor. And when I say intimidation, you wouldn't think people would be intimidated. But some can, and some get the alligator arms when they get smoked. Yeah. You know, running across the middle.
Absolutely.
But you can't do that. And I get it, though. I understand it to a point with head injuries and you don't want to see people, you know, hurt, you know, especially that last a lifetime. But also, I think the NFL, they say you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet. I think they went too far with how they did it. And the people that really got caught in the crosshairs were when they made the rule change. Because you had guys in the league used to playing the way I played, where man, you just knocked the fucker out, you know. And normally in the meeting the next day, you got $100 for the big hit, you know.
I don't know anything about that, but
I'm gonna give you some real truth in a second. But that would happen. And awesome. But nowadays, not only you get a flag, forget the flag, forget the 15 yards, you get fined at least 37.5. So now they're taking it out of your pocket as well. But again, I understand the safety reason for it. But they went so far the other way and they're throwing flags and I'm just sitting at home going, you're flagging that? I mean, you know, it didn't lead with his head or how they protect the quarterback. Sometimes I think it just went a little too far and I think they got to find a little more of a happy medium, but I understand why they're doing it. So that's the biggest difference on the field. And the part I was going to say, I get real about it. When they suspended Greg Williams for bounty gate, shit. I mean, come on, that stuff. And I'm not saying they shouldn't try and get that out of the league. And this is going to sound bad. It's going to almost sound like there's honor amongst thieves. But we did that, and a lot of teams did that. Man, we'd be sit there and be in a meeting, and it'd be like, okay, X amount end up on this guy if he doesn't finish the game. But here's the thing. And this is again where people say, oh, that sounds horrible. It had to be a clean hit. If you hit a guy, so you didn't want to have a guy go head hunting, or you didn't want a guy twisting an ankle in a pile. Right. If you got flagged for a hit, you weren't going to get that. And I know there's going to be a lot of people listening going, oh, that's still bullshit. You were trying to hurt somebody. And the answer is really no. I mean, I would go all the way back to CYO football when my dad coached me. And my dad is one of the toughest people I ever met. And he said, you learn the proper technique. You hit somebody like they're not there and you drive them into the ground. Mm-hmm. And if they don't get up, that's part of the game. Because you may get hit like that and you may not get up. And if it's a legal hit, that's part of the game. And that's the mantra I always lived with. And it just got put a little bit to that, as Steve, you know, in the locker room, hey, you know, this money here, this guy don't finish. But it had to be a clean hit. You weren't trying to knock him out. But if you hit him clean and they were hurt, then, you know, you got the money. And I know it sounds horrible. So the bounty gate all falling on Greg Williams is amazing, because that was happening in a lot of places. Well, you, I mean, $100 hit, you know, no?
You may have some thoughts, huh?
I have a little history of Greg Williams. And so when he was with New Orleans, and there was an individual, there was a safety who hit me out of bounds. And his name is Darren Sharper. Darren Sharper goes to hit. I step out of bounds. We throw a screen. I step out of bounds, and he's going to finish me. And I kind of look back at him like, hey. And this is what Darren said. If I don't hit you, I'll get fined.
Wow.
I said, what? Because now I said some animated things to let him know.
Sure.
So he went to go protect himself, because I was like, hey, blankety blank, 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 blank. He was like, no, if I don't hit you. And that's how it led me to. And then after that, I caught it, you know, a couple of times after that, I caught a pass, and I happened to be on their sideline. I had a few words with Greg. And ever since then, I had never really experienced that out in the open. Now, I knew, because I played and I played a certain way, there were times where if you get an opportunity to, I don't want to say eliminate, but put a guy who can impact the game, if you can put him on a shelf legally. And when I say put him on a shelf, I'm talking about you going across the middle and you happen to be that impact player, and that other impact player happens to be a safety, and that ball is high, he's going to hit you in your ribs. Mm-hmm. And the difference between today's players, that player is going to hit them low. Mm. Because one, they're afraid to
– they're afraid they're going to get the fine.
They're afraid to get the fine. But back in the old days that Mike's talking about, you took that hit to what they call, you separate the ball from the player.
From the man.
Yeah.
And so when you do that is when that receiver catches the ball, and depending on how that ball is thrown, that ball is thrown in the numbers and he's going across the middle. He knows he's about to get hit. That receiver is going to catch it with his body. So that defender has to dislodge the person from the ball.
Yep. I get what you're saying.
And by doing that, generally, us little divas, you know, we ain't built the same way as Golik. We ain't built 300 pounds.
Yeah.
Right?
So you take that contact.
Bow, bow, bow. You know, you get up. I've seen guys get hit and hit so hard that when they get up, you can see them still
clenched up
as if they still have the ball. Mm. And the ball is not there. Yeah. You know, guys are asleep or whatever the case may be. So that old school football.
You know, and we didn't, you didn't want to hurt people. Oh. But this is back again when you could hit somebody as hard. I hit Emmitt Smith as hard as I ever hit anybody on a sideline when he was running on the sidelines. And I built up full speed and I dove. And I mean, I tried to separate his shoulders from his body. Mm-hmm. And dude hit the ground, popped up and ran back to the huddle. I just went, shit. It's like one of those, you know, if you were boxing and you gave somebody your best punch and they just flinched and then we came right back at you. But I want, Steve, let me ask you, because we asked like older, and I mean back even further, receivers, because I'm glad headshots are out of the game, especially defenders that are lunging and putting their head down. I mean, that's just asking for trouble. But would you rather get, because you're right, what's happening now, and if I were a DB, I'd be doing the same thing. I take someone out low. Now, as a receiver, would you rather get hit chest or up or knees down?
Chest up.
Yeah.
That's what every receiver says, because they don't want to get their knee blown out. Yeah, that's where every defender's going today, because they don't want to
lose
fired.
Your moneymaker. You get hit low, right?
I always did this. When I'll crack back on a corner, I hit them high. But if I didn't respect you, I hit you low.
Dang.
And the reason why, and I, very few guys I ever tried to hit low. But when you hit a player low, you're also letting that player
know.
You're
sending a message. You're sending a message for sure.
That
see, but isn't it different though, Steve? Because now the defenders are doing that because they know if they go chest or up, there's a great chance they're getting a flag and a great chance they're getting fined. So almost out of necessity, they got to go down low.
I'm just saying, back then, it's a fine line because here's the problem: you can wrap up a guy, you don't have to hit him low. You don't have to shoot your shot hit a guy low. So I believe that's a. I mean, I've told guys. Like, I had an opportunity, I think Ed was with the Jets one time, and we was the Panthers, we were playing them. And I had an opportunity to peel back on him, and I hit him high, and he kind of looked at me. I said, hey, bro, I respect you. I'm not going to hit you low. And he was like, man, appreciate that. There is a respect thing. Yeah. Because when you do, I believe when you are an impact player, I'm not going to say superstar, impact player, where you have to account for these individuals on the field. And you have that ability to impact the game. And that other impact player has the ability to impact the game. And you hit me low. Now you are basically saying to me and to other guys, you don't respect my craft. And you're trying to eliminate me to make a living.
Yeah.
So now what are you basically saying? You don't care about my family.
Right.
You don't care about me. So now what is my meter saying? I don't care about your family and I don't care about you or your career. Yeah. With being on Mike and Mike, you had the opportunity because of ESPN, they call it the car wash. You guys have had the opportunity of having so many different personalities, so many different point of views, and then also so many different stars that come through. Tell me, you know, obviously me being one of those people that had the opportunity to go through the car wash, you know, we've got to know each other and to some degree, and I don't mean this as derogatory towards you or you meant it towards me, but when I had the opportunity to go through the car wash because of the way I played and because of at times the way I gave off what kind of individual I was, a lot of times I heard either from Mike or a lot of different people, oh, you are kind of different from what we expect or what we've seen from you as a player. Talk about why and what you have experienced seeing those guys come through the car wash or what you've learned about the persona or the mirage of different players who have come through the car wash of ESPN through Mike and Mike in the morning.
The some of the interesting things is the best thing you can do, and it sounds, and you did it, was just be who you are. Just be yourself. Because whenever you get on air, if all of a sudden you have to change into a different persona, and you can't sustain that. If the mic went on every morning at 6 a.m. and for 4 hours, 5 days a week, 20 hours a week, I had to go into an act, man, that would have sucked. And you could figure it out really quick. So the best thing is just to be yourself. You'll either get accepted for it or not. And that was the piece of advice I would have for athletes that would come through. I would say, don't try too hard. You know the game. You're not going to get put out. You're not going to get thrown to the wolves. If you're here from the NBA and on a car wash, you're going to talk NBA. If you're here for NFL, you're going to talk NFL. No one's going to try and sideswipe you, make you look bad. We're here. We want you to come back. So we're going to put you in a position to win. So just be natural. Be who you are. Be conversational. Because the producers and such will try and every now and then will say, okay, when you talk, this camera will be on you. You look at that camera. And I'd be like, don't worry about that shit. Just talk to the person that's talking to you. Just have the conversation with them and be yourself. Because you're going to talk to a lot of different people who talk to you in different ways. Just be yourself. Just be conversational. Don't try and put on an act for anybody. Don't try and get too in depth because, you know, while a lot of people want to think they know all the ins and outs of the games, they don't. You don't have to dive into unbelievable breakdowns of offense or defense. Just do it enough so people understand what you're saying and have fun, man. If you want to crack a joke, crack a joke. If you want to laugh a little bit, laugh a little bit. But that was really the biggest thing I would say, because a lot of times we had them first because our show was in the morning before they would move on to the next radio show or the next, you know, noon sports center, and then on to the NFL Live, and then on to 6 o'clock sports center. So we'd get them first. And that's what I would always say. Just do your thing. Just be yourself. Just be your personality. But I've also had guys in there, great players, a great player who shall remain nameless and unfortunately has passed away. He came in and I was talking to him before his audition for one of the shows. And he said, man, just tell me how to get through this. I don't really want to work too hard. I just want to kind of get through it and skate and just, you know, have this as an easy second way to make some money. And I'm like, dude, that ain't going to happen. I said, if you're going to come here, be specific to a show, you got to put your time in. You know, when I first started working NFL Live, you know, I called coaches and I called, talked to players, you know, and I made sure, because the one thing, Steven, I know as you find out, when you get out of the game and you start criticizing guys you just played with and you damn well better be right, because I would do that. And then I'd be out on the road for Sunday countdown and a player would come up and be all pissed at me. And I'd say, what did you hear? And of course he'd say, you know, my brother's friend's cousin, dad heard you say this. And I'm like, come on, did you hear me say it? What did they hear you say? You know, and they would say, and I said, no, I didn't say that. This is what I said, you know, because you get some sensitive guys out there. So you had to know what you were saying. If you were going to criticize them, you had to know that, or just say, hey, I'm not sure of the coverage here, or I'm not sure what the blocking scheme was, but it looks like this or it looks like that. But that was the biggest thing I think I would tell the people is, man, just do your thing. And the best one of all that I have ever been around, I knew him when he was with the Sixers and I was with the Eagles. I mean, he's been on my show a ton, is Charles Barkley. I mean, you know, Chuck being Chuck is about as good as you can get. And some people like him, some people don't. But he's just himself. And I know, Steve, that's something that I noticed out of you right away, is you're just where yourself, you know, and that's what is going to carry somebody, so you don't have to put on an act as you move up in the business.
Well, our last segment here, Mike, is called the Deep Three. These are three questions that go beyond who you are on the football field, who you are as an analyst, and just lets us get to know who Mike is. So, Steve, go ahead and the first one.
All right, you've achieved so much, you know, being having an opportunity. Just going on 11 on the late night shows, 11 times. Meeting the president, getting some Emmys, doing all this stuff, success, getting paid a king's ransom to talk about sports. With that, all those achievements, are there any milestones left that you wish or still desire to reach?
That's a really good question.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I did a couple of years of where we did the extra Monday Night Football game. I would say that, you know, but we did that. Do a whole season would be nice. You know what I'd like to do? And I did it once. I've become good friends with Darius Rucker, and he lost a bet to me, and I actually got to sing a song on stage at one of his concerts in front of 20,000 people. Wow. Let me tell you, did I have a few beverages before that one?
You slight. It was
right.
Yeah, he had to sing. He had to sing the Notre Dame fight song, and then I sang a song. He said he just can't sing any of my songs. I'm like, okay, thanks. I love to try and sing. I karaoke a lot. I'd like to do that again. I'd like to sing. And I've gotten to know a few, especially the country guys. I'd like to win another bet and sing at another concert. I enjoyed that a lot. I mean, it was nerve-wracking as hell, but man, did I like it. So I would like to do that again.
So did they set you up with the earpiece in there?
No. And they told me that it was Take It Easy by the Eagles is what I sang. And it was one of those stages where you could walk out by the fans, but right where the crux was and most of it were the two speakers. They said, stay between the two speakers. If you walk out, you're going to get the reverb because you don't have those in and you may be off on the song. So I got into it. I'm singing this song and I'm about 6-7 drinks in. I am singing the shit out of this song. I'm singing the shit out of this song and I am feeling it, you know. My family's in the audience. I'm like, you know, pointing to them, yeah, singing. They told me afterward, they all freaked out. They all went, oh, shit. And I walked out and somehow I was fortunate enough to stay with the beat. But, I mean, that was so much fun. I didn't care how I sounded. They said it sounded all right. You know, again, I didn't care. So that was fun. And I dig that. So that's the old thing. I think athletes want to be entertainers and entertainers always want to be athletes. So that would be something I would like to continue to live out is singing.
Well, outside of performing with Darius Rucker, what do you think is your biggest non-sports accomplishment in your life?
You know, easily to me, it's raising my three kids, you know, with my wife. I mean, we had said when we started having kids, everything was going to be about them. And it was, even with my work, I was done at 10 o'clock every day. So I was the lunch dad at school. I coached the kids in all their little league sports. And I was calling college games on the weekend then. And I told ESPN, when my oldest, which was Mike, got to high school, I was going to stop calling college games because I wanted to be around on the weekends to see all their games. So I was able to coach them in little league, hang out at their school. I traveled to every one of Mike and Jake's football games, home or away, in high school and college. Every one of Sydney's national swim meets before she got to college and all her swim meets. So, you know, and I know that may sound sappy and all that, but that's what we wanted. You know, we wanted to be in our kids' lives and be there. Cause my dad had to work two jobs and my dad still found time to coach me in all our little league stuff. Some stuff he couldn't be at cause he had to work two jobs. I was very fortunate in this profession between football and then broadcasting to be in a position where I could be there, and I was damn well going to be there. So that's probably the biggest thing for me. I know for me and my wife that we were around a lot for our kids as they grew up, and now they're adults. And so they're fucked up. I guess it's on me.
I love the realness from Mike.
So the last question, if you didn't do sports, what do you think you'd be doing right now?
Boy, that is a million-dollar question. I have to think I would have used my degree from Notre Dame. I mean, a lot of people do. And I do think, and that's one of the things that I learned. Again, I got to see Notre Dame from 12 years old all the way through my years and then my kids' year. So I know a lot of what it's about, and I know the pipeline, and I know the connections that you can have. So I would imagine I would have been a guy that would have sought out those, and I would have gone into the business world. I did well enough in school and what my major was where I could have gone into wherever that would have taken me, but that's probably what I would have done. I would have used a connection to try and get a job somewhere and then gone from there and see where that led me. Where that would have, I don't know. But boy, I certainly wouldn't trade what I did for the world, man, that's for sure.
Well, we appreciate your time. Absolutely. Man. It's been great to talk to you. Always admired you, loved. You know, obviously, because of our broadcasting, you know, the Super Bowl usually is where we all get to kind of meet.
Yes.
And talk to each other. And there's been so many times me and Golic, when I started off working with him as a player and then I got out, we see each other at different events. Uh-huh. And man, it was, man, miss seeing you, bro.
We got LA. Let's hope when we get back next year, LA is back to normal. We'll get to see everybody again.
All right. Well, appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. We'll see
you. You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent. And most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It. Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., that is me, is a production of Cut to It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut to It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team, Wesley Robinson and John Show. From Balto Creative Media, Cut to It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Labreck, production coordinator Taylor Robinson. Theme music by Alex Johnson, lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton. It's on.